Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Couple of Arslings, the Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I am Alyssa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in Season 3, so we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcastlandia. Jessica, how are you?
Alyssa. So fucking tired.
Like, not to be that white millennial, but Mercury is in retrograde and I am feeling it right now.
Yeah, this month, I mean, I know we're only like in like for a couple days. We've just hit November, but it's just, I'm so tired all the time. Like, I know seasonal depression is real.
It's very real. When it's getting dark at 3:30 in the afternoon and the sun starts going away, I'm like, man, this is not good.
Yeah, I just want to, like, curl up in a ball and just, like, do nothing for the rest of the day. So, it's been challenging.
Unfortunately, neither of us are independently wealthy, so that's not really an option.
Yeah, and I just can't see myself ever having the patience to marry, like, someone for wealth, because you still have to, like, pretend to, like them and, you know, put up with them, and I just couldn't do that. So it's all on me to make my money.
Right. No family money, no sugar daddy. We are
it's
cursed.
Hard. It's a hard life that we live. But speaking of relationships, that's what our small talk segment is going to be, guys, because, you just can't get away from it.
Twitter had a lot to say today, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's all over social media, and, it's holidays. I think that's just, like, the whole thing is, like, you just kind of focus on who you're dating or who you're not dating.
It's cuffing season.
Keanu Reeves is dating someone, you guys.
Yes.
So sorry.
Go Keanu.
Sorry if you had these, like, delusions that you were one day going to end up with Keanu Reeves. It's not going to happen.
You know, I never really understand that when people are, like, mad that celebrities start dating other people. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
The only thing keeping
the only thing keeping
you apart was the fact that they're dating this other person? All right. Let's.
Like, if she or he wasn't in the picture, like, you would have a clear road.
Right. Yes. Oh, God.
Yeah, I do love that. And then it gets weird when, like, the opposite is true, though, too. It gets weird when people are like, oh, my God, I love them together. They're perfect. You're like, you don't know.
You don't know them. I know. I'm guilty of that sometimes. I'm like, oh, they're so beautiful and perfect. Of course, it's amazing. But, yeah, that idealization isn't great either. But still, let's talk about Keanu Reeves, his possibly new, possibly sort of long-term relationship that just became public.
I feel like it's the second.
I think so, too.
It's been long-term, and he's just now feeling comfortable enough to, like, put it out there, because he's a pretty private, like, down to earth, really well adjusted dude. So,
well, and it's kind of sad too, because, like, he hasn't been public in probably, I think, like, 20 years or something like that with a relationship, and he has, like, all this tragedy in his backstory. Mm. Like, he was with this woman and they were pregnant, and then she got in a car accident, I think, and died and lost the baby, and it was just like a really awful, tragic situation. And so my heart, like, bleeds for him that he's, you know, had this pain in his background. And so I'm just like, yes, Keanu, please. I'm so happy that you're finding love again.
Okay. And also, so he like, stepped out with Alexandra Grant, who's an artist.
Yes.
And
they've been friends for a long time.
Yeah, we'll get to the age part of it, but, like, I just want to, like, sit in the friends to lovers space.
I know. It's my favorite romance trope. It's so good.
It's the best. And they worked, they're friends and
co-workers.
Like, your girls. They worked on a book together.
They started a publishing house together and then worked on a couple of books. Like, the foundation is there.
The dream. Yeah. But I think everyone kind of freaked out over the fact that, so Keanu Reeves is 55.
Insane. Like,
let that set in for
right.
a second.
Right. Very well and... preserved. Yeah, she's something. The immortal.
It's immortal. Alexandra Grant, his girlfriend, is 46.
Yes.
So there's still an age gap, you know. It's not like Dennis Quaid.
Oh my God.
Age gap.
Oh, where disgusting. He's like
dating them in the womb at this point. But yeah, and everyone freaked out. So when they went to this film gala, and you know, she's 46 years old, but she's not dyeing her hair. So she has like this beautiful white, like
beautiful, hair. Beautiful like, gray hair.
I hope to get to that color like one day.
I know. I really like, want
to
be
actively bleach my hair to get to that color. And that's probably all natural for her. So
I know. I'm pissed off. I know. I really like, I have such thin hair, so I'll never have like the thick mane that she does. But I really love to be one of those like cool old ladies. Not that she's an old lady, but like. When I go gray, I want to go gray.
I want to go gray with like sophistication and style.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm going to go gray like that bird lady in like Home Alone too.
Oh no.
It's just like stringy and it looks like wet popcorn.
Right. Well, hopefully you won't have all those pigeons. So, you know.
I don't. I'll have cats. but yeah, so the whole like kind of fuss was one, he has a girlfriend. He's pretty private. So we didn't know that. Two is she's in his like kind of same age bracket realm. I don't know. But the fact that she's 46, he's 55, there is still that age gap. And yet people are like, good for Keanu for dating a woman his age. It's like, let's unpack how kind of weird that is to say.
I know. And, you know, and like it's great. And like, yes, I think it's really important that he's, you know, dating an accomplished woman who has her own skills and her own life and is, you know, older. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's getting like such fawning praise just shows like how the bar is in hell. You know what I mean? Like
the bar is buried 6 feet under.
Right.
Which is where a lot of these older men will be when their teenage girlfriends are like entering, you know, their 20s.
Right.
So it's like, it's really rough.
Like I'm glad rough. That I know. I'm glad that it's happening. I'm glad he's happy. I'm glad she seems awesome. But like she's still a decade younger than him. And the fact that everybody's like, oh my God, same age is like, all right. That's odd.
And, I mean, and I don't want to like, you know, genderize too much, but I feel like, you know, whenever we see these stories about older men, and I mean, let's be real, it's usually like older men, either they're, you know, in power or they're celebrities or mm-hmm. politicians, whatever, dating younger women, it feels like it's always on the women to be like, ooh, that's gross.
Right.
Whereas I think men might look at it as like, oh, good on you. You know, you're getting that younger woman. Like it's
right.
It's almost like a kind of middle age rite of passage at this point to, mm-hmm. you know, you get the red Corvette, the red whatever, and a younger woman. And it's so gross. And I think seeing how everyone's reacting to Keanu, like just dating, like normally dating a normal, you know, woman that's his age, that they probably have a lot in common because she's around his age. It's like, it kind of makes you realize, oh, like, I know that we're calling out these dudes that are dating younger women, but like, we should really be making a thing of it because it's gross.
Yeah. Well, and I think with a 9-year age difference, if a woman was dating a man who was 9 years younger than her, it would be like a thing, you know, like,
oh, my God, yeah.
She would be a cougar. And so they would not be seen as the same age, I don't think. But yeah, I think the expectations between men and women in relationships is so different. And another example of that was sort of going around Twitter today was Emma Watson, who was talking about being single at 30 and how, you know, she was talking to British Vogue and she said, if you've not built a home, if you do not have a husband, if you do not have a baby and you're turning 30 and you're not in some incredibly secure, stable place in your career or you're still figuring things out, there's just an incredible amount of anxiety. And she talked about how she's happily single and it took her a long time to sort of get to that point, but she sort of refers to it as being self-partnered. And when I first read that, I was like, okay, like just say you're single. That's kind of pretentious. But I liked the idea of sort of reframing that to being more of a positive thing. And it's also, it's insane to me that people would give Emma Watson, who is so accomplished by like any metric, that if because she's not married and has a baby, that anybody would like give her a hard time about that, because like she's a super famous actress. She's, you know, she's used her position to be an activist and really work towards making a difference. But like there was still this fuss around her reaching 30 or almost being 30 and not being married. And just the expectations on men and women are so different. And I'm very tired.
I'm exhausted. I need a nap.
For like a year.
I feel like, and you know, the talking about, you know, Emma Watson and the anxiety, it's sometimes it's not even, you know, sometimes it's not even kind of vocalized from outside sources. It can be something that you like nurture within yourself, because we've internalized all these messages that,
yeah,
by 30, you know, whether you're a man or a woman, you should have this, this, and this, and your shit should be figured out and all that different stuff. And that's just not how the way, it's not the way the world works anymore. It's certainly not for women, because, you know, we're not staying at home. We're not, you know, taking care of babies. And, yeah, it made me sad to think that out of all of us, Emma Watson,
just
our angel, our icon, would think that way. But I like the term self-partnering. I mean,
yeah, I kind of.
If you want to say single,
right?
But
you know,
self-partnering is pretty cool too.
I came around to it, like, you know, over the course of thinking about it a lot today, because I am 30 and single with no children. But I think you made a really good point saying that it's, you know, we internalize these messages and all that. So a lot of it is fixing your own thinking because of how, you know, certain ideals are, you know, enforced by culture. And so self-partnering, I think, I don't know, I've come around to it. And I think it's a sign that she's done a lot of internal work to be kinder to herself. And I respect that.
Yeah, I think when you say you're single, it's like, like you're almost missing something, like there's another half of you that's not there yet or something. And that's just so, that's so not true. That's so off base. So if it helps you to say that you're self-partnered and not like just single, then by all means, like, go for it. Like,
yeah,
whatever. I'm perfectly happy saying that I'm going to be an unmarried hag for the rest of my days.
I prefer the term harpy, but hag is good too.
You know what? Yeah. Sea witch? I don't care.
Shrieking banshee on the moors? Let's go.
Pigeon lady in the park? Yeah, I embrace it all. But you know what? Emma Watson is, she's got class.
She's Emma Watson. She's right. Right. Speaking of people who are involuntarily self-partnered. That's a rough segue. I'm sorry.
But we did it, so we're going to go with it.
Season 3, episode 2 of The Last Kingdom. Uhtred is in a rough spot, like a really rough spot.
Sure, yeah. Well, his wife, Gisela, is dead. Let's just, you know,
mourn.
Put that nail in the coffin. And she's been, you know, she's died while he was off, and so her body has been buried in a
Christian cemetery.
Christian cemetery. It's holy ground. And that's just not cool with Uhtred for so many reasons. Mainly because that's not what Gisela would have wanted, and he knows that. So,
yeah.
It's a rough thing to come back to this news that, like, yes, your wife is dead. It's even worse to come back and to know that her final resting place and all of that has been decided by people who just didn't know her and probably didn't care for her. So I get it. I get where the angst is coming from.
Yeah. So Uhtred and Hild and Finan, they go to the cemetery and dig up her body so she can be burned like a pagan. And honestly, like, if you're not willing to help me dig up my dead wife, are you really my friend? So Hild and Finan really showed that they're real bros.
Yeah, that's Uhtred. The medieval, like, ride or die test. Will you help me consecrate this holy ground?
Right. Help me find real rest for my dead wife.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously, it's so emotional to see.
I mean,
Uhtred, like, breaks down. It's so sad. And I think, you know, this this time around, I really, like, felt for him because I did come to love Gisela. And I paid more attention to their relationship. So it makes much more sense now, you know, to see how he's, like, kind of just losing it over this.
Yeah, really deeply affected.
And he's not thinking straight. And if he was, you know, he would have maybe gone to Alfred first. Like, I don't know. Probably not, actually.
I don't think so.
He would go ask for permission, but, like, Usha doesn't ask for permission. That's never been his
MO. Never.
He doesn't even ask for forgiveness afterwards. He's just like, right. I'm going to do it.
He's like, I was right, so I'm not going to apologize. Screw you, old man. Yeah, and so that, of course, doesn't fly. But before we get to, like, all of that, we've got Athelwald really, like, really ramping up the scheming in this episode. Like, he sees that there's an opening. Like, Alfred's dying. Everybody knows it. And Edward is, you know, he's very young. He's, you know, in love with this peasant girl and, like, knocked her up. And he's had a very messy, youthful period of his life. And so he's not really quite ready to assume the throne. So Athelwald is like, all right, I'm going to start sowing seeds of dissension. And this is my time to take back what he really, really thinks is his, that was stolen from him.
Yeah. And so the way that he is going to do that, because he is a pretty smart shit stirrer, is to cause this kind of rift between Alfred and Uhtred. And it's kind of a bit of luck that he sees them going to the graveyard and digging up Gisela's grave. I'm sure he would have found another way if that hadn't presented itself. But he goes to, what's that dude's name?
Brother Godwin. I wrote it down because I kept forgetting it too. Alyssa, yeah.
You're the best. yeah, Brother Godwin. This is the monk who's in the wheelchair. He has these visions. He's also, like, a total fucking creep. So
right. Athelwald basically bribes him with the possibility of hand jobs in the future from pretty girls. So,
Fondas and fondling is the new, you know, trashy fuckboy pickup line, I guess.
Right. Andrew Jackson is out, fondling is in.
Wait, was Andrew Jackson ever in?
I think it is. Okay. It should be. Look,
it's clever, and I think in 2019 we need, like, new ways to, like, reinvent and to laugh. And so, yeah, if someone said that, I'd probably be like,
all right, maybe
let's talk. You seem interesting. Right.
But yeah, so he basically is like, all right, let's make Uhtred look really bad with the help of this monk. And so, Beoka is sent to bring Uhtred before Alfred and is like, hey man, this is really bad. You did a bad thing. And yeah, everybody's super pissed that, he dug up Gisela and wrecked the consecrated ground. And Aelswith is a real B word about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so interesting to me because I feel like the last time we really saw Aelswith, well, I mean, we saw her in, you know, season 3, episode 1, but when this whole Ethelflaed shit was going down, it was like Uhtred could not be there fast enough for her. You know, it's like, oh, we need Uhtred. We need Uhtred to fix this. And now I think, you know, we've had a time jump and we can see that those old kind of, you know, bad feelings between everyone, they've just, like, festered and grown.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it really shows in how Aelswith kind of approaches this whole thing. And even just, I have to say, you know, like, at least Alfred is like, you know what, I understand that you're upset. Gisela was a good woman, like, all this different stuff. Anytime Alfred, like, you know, said anything remotely kind about Gisela, Aelswith's just over here like, ugh. And it's like, come on, girl. She's dead.
I know. And, you know, Beoka was there who was like, hey, remember how Uhtred has been your ride or die for years? Like, maybe give him some slack because his wife is dead while he was off serving you. And, you know, it's just, there's so many people speaking on behalf of Uhtred. And then this fucking priest comes out and he calls Gisela a whore and says she deserved to die and all this awful stuff. And everybody witnessed that. Like, everybody witnessed and saw that he was an antagonist, like a serious antagonist. He was completely goading him on. And so Uhtred slaps him in the face, which I think for a person who was healthy, that would have, you know, been okay. But Brother Godwin is not in the best of health. And so when he hits the ground, he dies. Like, straight up dies from a slap.
The bitch slap of death.
Man.
He deserved it. And I feel he did. Worse.
Right. Like, no one will miss him. No one will mourn him. Especially not the girls who were supposed to fondle him. So,
And burnt.
Brother Godwin.
She was of no greater worth than the witch Skade, whom he has brought to the...
Yeah, so it's pretty bad, and everybody's like, holy shit, this is really bad. Uhtred has to flee, and he's got his bros stationed outside the house to guard the door, and it's really great. Yeah, got some like A+ Finnan and Cedric action there.
Love it.
Hild came in for the assist. Like, yeah, so good.
Oh my gosh, I love that. The little exchange where Hild is like, you know, quit acting like children, and she goes into the hut, and Snap is like, well, you let the nun in, but you wouldn't let me in. They're like, well, we're afraid of the nun.
Right, we're afraid of the abbess. I'm like, yes, you should fear Hild.
Do not make me step on your Irishman.
Well, that is what I will do.
Oh, for goodness sake, stop behaving like children. You are goading him.
I was, Hild, and enjoying it.
Yeah, I loved that whole... I mean, you just see how close this group is, and like, they're willing to kind of go up against, you know, Alfred's entire army, like, for each other. I mean, I think that's really... They've come a long way.
Yeah.
And that bond gets tested. I mean, this entire season, that bond gets tested. But I think especially this episode as we go forward.
Yeah.
You know, I think so for now, like, enjoy Finnan, like, being a cocky little shit and, like, you know, antagonizing Steappa, because it's the best.
Yeah, it's so good. But, Hild, you know, for every, you know, ride or die Finnan, you need to have a Hild there also to kind of talk you down from your worst impulses.
Sure.
So she, you know, she goes to see Uhtred, and she really encourages him to go and talk with Alfred. And because Alfred, you know, he's such a frustrating character, because you know he's sensible, and you know that he understands where Uhtred is coming from in this situation. Like, he witnessed what happened. Like, he knows that he was goaded into it. But at the same time, he's so stuck on, you know, his ideals that it's going to be hard for him to sort of shake from that. But, like, Hild is sort of appealing to Uhtred to, in turn, appeal to Alfred's better sensibility. Because hiding and waiting for him is not going to work out. Like, he has more men. Uhtred is outnumbered. That's not going to end well for him, so he has to sort of face up to the whole situation.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, so Hild goes back, and Bjarke comes with Alfred's, you know, offer of forgiveness in exchange for Uhtred's kind of oath to Edward, which doesn't seem like a big deal until you think Edward's just a kid. Like, this is going to be for life. You're asking him to pledge his life to this kid.
Right.
And he's already spent, like, a hell of a lot of years doing your dirty work. So,
yeah, we're probably reaching... Yeah, I think we're reaching, like, 15 years or something. It's been a long time that Uhtred has been, you know, there for Alfred. And so this sort of demand for 100 pieces of silver for the Weirguild and your oath, he's, like Uhtred says, like, you know, you're asking for my life. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it.
You're trying to hide it as something like, oh, nothing big, just some silver and, like, your word that you'll serve my son when I'm dead. But that's actually, if you take a second to think about it, that's an insane ask. And yeah. I don't know if Alfred really thought that he would say yes. I guess he thought he might. I don't know. I mean, he loves, like, Uhtred is fond of Edward. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think maybe he thought that, coupled with, you know, this threat of, like, well, if you don't do this, you know, something bad's going to happen, would tempt him. I don't know.
You know, I think at this point, like, I think Uhtred would have been willing to help Edward, especially, you know, setting up his kingship after Alfred's death. You know, he's green. He needs somebody to help him. And I think if that wasn't a demand placed on him, he would have willingly given it at least for a few years while he got established. But the fact that, you know, Bayaka is all ride or die for Alfred and like screams at him about all that he's given him, and Uhtred is, you know, reminding him that he earned it. But yeah, I think the fact that Alfred wants to strong arm him into giving his entire life really turns him off of something that he would have considered, I think, if it was handled a different way.
Yeah. And again, we're kind of, you know, faced with this truth that if things aren't done on Alfred's terms, then, you know, he doesn't want them done. Like, it has to be his way or no way. And it's so frustrating. And I think you see that when Uhtred comes into the hall and they have this kind of, you know, back and forth, and Uhtred is like, I'm not doing this.
You demand too much.
Yeah, you see how exhausted Uhtred is by all of it.
Right. And I think the thing is, I think Alfred kind of, he agrees that, you know, his demands are unfair. Like, he knows this is too much of an ask. But at the same time, he knows that he has the upper hand, so he's going to deny negotiation. You know, he tells Uhtred, you know, self-pity doesn't suit you. I'm allowing you to live. You will do as I ask. He's not asking. He's demanding. And that's, I think that's Alfred's problem in a nutshell.
Yeah. And so, you know, of course, that's not going to fly with our little hot-headed Viking warrior. So,
never.
His logical next step is to take a knife to Alfred's throat and hold him hostage while he kind of plans his little getaway. He forces Bjelke to kind of lock the door so it's just him and Alfred out in the hall, and he can kind of make this escape. And before he does, there's some very harsh words exchanged. Alfred shits himself, I think. And an oath is broken. So it's,
you know, and
pretty much done.
And, you know, I feel like Uhtred dragged him into that hallway. He really wanted to have just like a man-to-man conversation. You know what I mean? Like, the knife was hasty, but I think he really wanted...
How was he
going
to get him out there, though?
How is he going to get him out there? It's totally justified. I get that. And I think he really hoped that if he could talk to Alfred one-on-one, they could have, you know, reached and... a cord of some kind, but Alfred was just, he's too proud and too angry, and it was never gonna work.
Oh my gosh. And did you see, you know, so after Uhtred flees, did you see like Alfred is kind of like
sad? He knows he fucked up.
He's crying. Dude, I was like, bottle up those crocodile tears and use them to wipe your shitty ass, Alfred. Like, it's fake. I don't have any sympathy for you. You did this.
Right, right. Alfred never accepts personal responsibility for his failures, only for his victories, when they're actually usually Uhtred's victories. But whatever.
we're not bitter about it.
We're not bitter.
I seem to have broken my oath, Lord. With luck, the whole of Wessex will now burn.
So yeah, Uhtred escapes, but he gets a spear wound from Steapa, who, like, you know, hurls it at him at a rooftop and
just
still
a little parting,
you know,
gift.
Right. And so they escape. You know, it's the Cookham crew, and they take Skade with them because she's bound to Uhtred with the curse. And yeah, things start getting really bad. That wound doesn't help things. The curse doesn't help things. Like, Uhtred is in a really bad way, and they're heading to Dunholm to see Brita and to see Ragnar, because, like, where else is he going to go? But I think sometimes Uhtred forgets that he's a dad. Like, who is taking care of his children right now? Like, he's got three, I think. So, I mean, I guess Hild has them, but come on, man. I feel like before you flee the country, you need to, like, make provisions for your children.
I mean, maybe. I'm just assuming, like, he has a damn good nanny.
Right. A great nanny.
Who's all, like, of super understanding and, like,
right,
women.
All of Hild's nuns take care of these poor orphaned children.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that is the first thing on Uhtred's mind, like, probably ever, but
ever?
Especially
maybe
right now.
Yeah.
Because as you said, that battle wound has festered. I mean, again, the importance of proper hygiene and maybe some hydrogen peroxide cannot go, you know, be understated.
Like, take a break and stitch up your, right, take a break and stitch up your open wound, please.
I mean, just at least wash it with some water and maybe some soap. I don't know.
Right. The bare minimum.
Because hallucinations, you know, induced by septic infections are rough.
Not great, but it gives us a chance to see Leofrich again. So,
oh my God.
Yay!
I would, like, pass up any penicillin offered if it meant I could hallucinate Leofrich, like, calling me Arsling, like, just one more time.
Remember me, Arsling. You'll get out of your bed and make ready.
For what?
To fight me.
Leofrich, I do not wish to fight you. Would I fight you?
Will fight me, you piece of shit.
Right, right. And, you know, it's a very aggressive hallucination. And this isn't comforting at all to Uhtred because, you know, he's basically telling him, hey, man, you know, get better. If Alfred can be king when he's all sickly, you can get over this, you know, flesh wound and lead your men.
Yeah, and he's also kind of berating Uhtred for breaking his oath and for, like, choosing to go back to the Danes when he is a Saxon. And I think it's you know, obviously it's the fever dreams, but it's also kind of a manifestation of Uhtred's guilt because as...
Sure.
You know, that oath-breaking was coming. It's been a long time in the making, but I think it still bothers someone like Uhtred, who is such a man of his word and, you know, has such a core, like, moral integrity about him.
Definitely.
There was no other choice, but he also hates that he had to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the fact that he's, you know, he's made his men who are so loyal to him, he's made them wanted men as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this wasn't just a decision that he made for himself. He made it for a lot of people who are counting on him. So, like, Uhtred's in the back of a cart. He's hallucinating. He's dying. It's really bad. And in other parts of the kingdom, you know, you've got Athelwald continuing to stir the shit, going to visit Athelred, and is like, hey, buddy, if I'm going to be king of Wessex, I'll let you be king of Mercia. So why don't you do me a solid and maybe kill your wife?
Ugh.
Bad.
Hey, these Ethels, man.
Never trust a male Ethel.
Never trust the Ethels. Yeah. So Ethelwald, he sees this opening that he's helped to create. He hires some men to form his own guard. He heads off to Mercia. Ethelred, I guess, has just been, like, petting his hawk for a while. I don't know what he does there.
He just kind of lazes around as
he's a lazy
a gentleman
little thing.
Of leisure.
Yeah, sure, we'll call that. And so he proposes this alliance because he knows, like himself, Ethelred is envious of Alfred. He wants more than what he has. He's going to play on that. Now's the time to kind of strike when Alfred's weak and Edward's still just a boy. And it's pretty shitty that Ethelwald is, like, so quick to be like, you know what, though? You're going to have to do away with Ethelfled because everyone respects her more. And they say that she's the real warrior and you're just a pretty boy. It just kind of sucks. Like, that's your blood.
Right.
And what are you doing, man?
And Ethelred falls for it so quickly. Like, I feel like if you have to shriek, my men are my own, they aren't your own. You know?
He knows what, like, he's saying is true.
Right. It's like in Game of Thrones when Tywin Lannister was like, no king that has to say that he's the king is actually the king.
Mm-hmm.
I just butchered that quote, but you know what I'm saying.
I get you.
If you have to say it instead of showing it, it's not a great position to be in. But yeah, so Athelwold sort of finds a stronghold there with Athelred, and then he moves on to Hessen and Bloodhair in an attempt to raise an army from them. So Athelwald is really using all of his capital at this point to try and, you know, raise an army against Edward, and it's going better than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, he's making moves. He's holding up those olive branches pretty high. I mean, it's going down, and it's going down according to plan, at least from his point of view. He's kind of convinced Ethelred to partner with him, get rid of Ethelflaed. He's convinced Heston and Bloodhair to go up north, partner with Ragnar and Uhtred. Even though there's bad blood between them, you know, the greater goal of, you know, taking out Alfred and conquering Wessex, that's, you know, that's the jewel. That's what every Dane wants, apparently.
Sure. So it's the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's where that saying came from. Yes.
Ethelwald.
Right. Right.
Yeah, no, we're not going to give him that credit. But that's the idea. And it doesn't take much. I mean, these Danes are, like, so bloodthirsty. It really, you just have to, like, point to a hill and be like, there'd be a good Let's place fight. For a battle.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, I'm down.
Let's do it.
Got no plans today.
Right, right. So, yeah, while Ethelwald is, you know, making deals in shady places, they're Finan and everybody is taking Uhtred north to Breida because Breida will know how to save him. Like, Breida knows how to break a curse. Breida knows how to dress a wound. Like, she get him to Breida. She knows everything because she's the queen and she's the best. So Leofric comes back as a specter again and calls him a traitor and tells him to fight him. And, like, in this second hallucination, it's even more intense because Uhtred starts responding to him and everybody can hear him talking to somebody that's not there. And they're like, holy shit, this is really bad. But luckily, Breida shows up at the right minute.
I mean, it was getting dark there. Like, there was a moment. There's a moment in that tent when Finan got super emotional over how sickly Uhtred was. It broke my heart.
I know. Well, he's so used to seeing him as such a powerful man to see him brought low like this. It's his best friend, man.
He looks up to him. Like, what can you do without him?
Right. And to see him brought low like that over something that seemed, you know, relatively insignificant at the time is striking, I think.
Yeah, and it's you know, I think so we do have to, like, kind of talk about, obviously, the, you know, educated, like, believers of science that we are know that, you know, he didn't clean his wound, that's why he's sick. But right. Not everyone thinks that way, especially back then. And to have Skade over here, like, throwing out curses left and right.
Ugh, the worst.
And then all of a sudden, Uhtred to, like, come down ill off of a flesh wound that normally, you know, probably wouldn't bother him. It starts to kind of, like, ramp up that eerie feeling. Tension. Of, like, something's going on that we just don't understand, we don't know, and we don't know how to fight it. And that's the scariest thing, is, like, these dudes know how to fight. They can take on anything, and this is something they feel like they can't take on.
It's Finan. Tell him my insides outward.
And kill her.
Or let me do it for you.
No.
Uhtred. Fear your dying.
And at one point, our sweet Citric, who is so pretty, but just, I don't think he's the smartest, you know.
He's more of the silent type.
He's the silent. But he says something. He says, she is the worm and Uhtred is the apple. And I'm like, yes. Oh my God, Citric. Like,
yes.
Metaphors. Let's do it.
Say more things. We like it when you talk.
Yeah. Who knew you're so deep? It's like everyone is kind of clued into this fact that she holds some kind of power over him. And right. I think that coupled with, you know, his wound and how sick he is really starting to look like it might defeat him before Breida comes.
When Finan, like, chokes out, I fear you're dying. I was like, oh.
And then he, like, offers to kill. He's like, I'll kill the witch. And I'm like, oh.
Do it, please.
Alyssa, I would kill a witch who cursed you if you needed me.
Oh, my God.
To.
Thank you. I would do the same. All right. Kill that witch pact. Yeah. Yes.
So Breida shows up in the middle of the night, like, kind of just in time, like you said, and they bring him to
She saw him on the road, so, like, she didn't just, like, magically appear. She saw them, knew they were coming.
I mean, she saw them on the road, but, like, did she have a vision of them coming? I don't know. Probably. She's got,
she just,
like,
knew.
So many superpowers.
I love her so much.
And she, one of her superpowers, we have to say, is dealing with that redheaded asshole, Canute.
the worst.
I'm never gonna say. I really just want to call him cunt. Like,
it's a lot. It's one of those when I see it written out, I have to like mentally block and be like, nope, that's no, not it.
Don't
that's,
say it like
that's,
that.
That's not it. But yeah, so he's there. He's, you know,
he's Ragnar's cousin. Mom's side.
Right, and he's trying to get with Brita real bad. But yeah, so she deals with him. She gets Uhtred to Dunholm. She fixes his wound and she blocks the curse. She takes this ram's head on a spike called a Nithstong and puts it outside of Skade's cell and basically like blocks her chakra, I guess, and she can't throw curses anymore.
You will not throw curses, not here. Not now I have this Nithstong to block your powers. This is Freya's soil now. And the goddess who brought the magic to the gods will protect us.
So yeah, she renders, you know, Skade toothless and, you know, Uhtred immediately starts to get better. So I think they do a really good job of like playing with the idea of like, well, is she really throwing curses or is it just because Uhtred finally got rest and cleaned his wound that he starts to heal? You know, it's
right. It's, the timing is all very like it's planned. It's very meticulous on the part of the show. And we're supposed to like kind of question everything, which yeah, I like.
I do, too.
Personally, I love this mythology shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
Let's talk about Freya. Let's talk about the gods. Let's do more ram's heads.
Yes. This I'm is down. Freya's soil now. Hell yeah. I'm all for that.
God, I want to say that to like someone.
Right?
Who just pisses me off.
This is Freya's soil I'm now.
I'm tied to Freya. yeah, so Brita kind of knows how to work that. And I think it's interesting coming from Brita because she is so smart and just so, like, common sense smart, you know? Like, she's street smart.
Yeah.
And she still sees the threat that someone like Skade poses. Like, she has a power, whether it's, like, an actual magical power or just the power that Uhtred is giving her over him.
Right. That kind of manipulation.
Yeah, there's something. She's got something that threatens Uhtred, and it's very real, and Brita wants to give him an opportunity to fight it, but only when she, you know, kind of decides that he's worthy of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus the idea, like, Skade is so bitchy in this moment, which, like, to be fair, I would be too if somebody took away my power, but the idea that she thinks that she could kill Brita is comical to me. Like,
honey,
you're not the one who gets to do that. Sit down.
Yeah. Like, just reevaluate your place. This is not it. This is not who you want to step to.
Right.
And yeah, so Uhtred, you know, gets better after the whole ram's head planting incident, and he's eating and he's palling around with Ragnar, and he's kind of, they have this back and forth where he's like, you're a Dane now, like you're back where you belong, you should right. be a Dane.
Yeah.
And it makes Ragnar so happy.
I know.
And I just know it's not gonna last, but I just loved like their little interaction.
You're a Dane for life now. Say it.
I am a Dane for life.
Well, say it.
I am a Dane for life.
Mean it!
I am a Dane for life. From this day onwards.
From this day onwards.
I mean, you can feel like how relieved Ragnar is to have him back. And then you can also feel the tension coming from Uhtred when plans of attacking Alfred or marching on Wessex are like eventually brought up.
Yeah.
Because that's what Danes do. And so
it is what Danes
do. We're already presented with this like schism of like, yeah, like we're happy to be home, but what does it really mean to be here?
Yeah. You know, I always love when Ragnar and Uhtred are together. I always think of that line from Tommy Boy, brothers don't shake hands, brothers got a hug. And I just like, I love them together. And, you know, this moment, I think Uhtred gets really caught up in it too. Because, you know, Ragnar welcomes him back, like you said, and Uhtred is like, all right, I'm a Dane for life. And I'm just like, man, again, you're making these choices for the people that follow you without any kind of thinking about what's going to happen for them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, you know, Uhtred sort of makes this unanimous decision for his men that really might not fly, you know. When they start talking about what they're going to do next, Ragnar's like, all right, well, since you told me that Alfred is weak, let's march south. Let's go march on Wessex. And I don't see how Uhtred could have thought that that wasn't going to be how things went. Because, like, obviously, everybody wants to take out Alfred, and that's what the Danes have always wanted. So now that they know that he's weak, yeah, of course they're going to try and take out Alfred. You know, and Finan points out that they have, like, they have friends and family in Wessex. This isn't cool. And, you know, Finan's like, all right, I came out here to have a good time, maybe do some hunting, and I'm feeling real attacked right now. He doesn't want war with Alfred. None of these men want war with Alfred. And for Uhtred to kind of agree to that was pretty thoughtless, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, can Finan just, like, live for a fucking second?
Right!
He wants a nap, he wants a woman, and he wants time to take up a new hobby.
Right!
He's on a bike, guys.
He's been wanting to try knitting for a while. Please let him do that without sending him into war.
It's just so much right now.
It is.
He's already done enough.
It's a lot.
So that's kind of where things end. And
well, he has that talk with Brita first.
Yeah,
which
we should really unpack that, because I don't like it.
I will see, like, I don't like it, but, like, I also kind of love it. Their friendship is so good, and she knows him so well. Like, even though, you know, they've been parted for years, and she can still read him better than anybody, and he still values her opinion over everybody's. And so that part of the conversation I do like, but I don't like the reveal that she can't have children, and so Ragnar is, like, you know, spreading it around outside of the relationship. Like, I get it, he needs an heir, but also, ugh. Like, you know, earlier Knut asked her how, you know, why she let him make a fool of her, and he kind of is. Like, even if Brita's made her peace with it, like, him stepping out so often and so willingly is just... Brita deserves better. She always deserves better, but she really deserves better from Ragnar.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Like, the kind of, like, rational part of me understands, like, back in that time...
It was different.
Having an heir was a very important thing, especially if you were a Viking warrior. The rest of his line has kind of been, like, you know, burned out, literally.
Literally.
Like, everyone in his family is dead. So I get that he wants to carry on the Ragnarsson name. And maybe that would mean, like, you know, you would have a child with someone else. But one is enough.
I mean,
like, it's to the sound of the way, like, everyone makes it sound. He's been, like, hitting up multiple ladies, like, multiple baby mamas. Lots of, like, you know, chitlin
running around the Danish hall.
And so that's where it, like, kind of crosses the line for me into something that's not just practical anymore. It feels like this is clearly, like, even just having one kid with another woman, I'm sure would hurt, but I can't imagine how painful it is for Brita to know that, like, he is regularly, you know, getting with other women and having babies. Like,
yeah,
that sucks.
It sucks. And so she sort of ends the conversation saying, Ragnar is my child, which I feel like every woman trying to date a millennial man feels that in her bones. She tells Uhtred, you know, betray him and I'll kill you. You have to undo the past and destroy Alfred. So I think Brita being the one to sort of talk sense into Uhtred and make him realize the reality of what he's done is super fitting, because she's always been, you know, the voice of reason for him.
For him and for this show.
Yes.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping Dogs Lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, guys, so now it's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for upcoming episodes like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Alyssa, what are you looking forward to next episode?
Well, this was a super emotional episode. You know,
yes.
Uhtred and Alfred seemingly break for good. And while, you know, I'm so torn when I think about them because their relationship is so toxic at this point. But I don't think either of them can really do better. You know, like the Danes can't give Uhtred all that Alfred has given him. They can't give him the wealth. They can't give him the title. They can't give him the life that he's enjoyed for a long time. But at the same time, you know, Uhtred has given Alfred better service than he deserves as well. So it's just, it's really messy. And after they're falling out, it's really only going to get worse. You know, I wish these two would just like kiss and make up and realize each other's value. But I know that's not going to happen. But I think that Uhtred knows that he doesn't really belong with the Danes anymore either. And his men certainly aren't on board. So I don't know. I think his hasty decision to kind of rejoin Ragnar's cause is going to have some serious fallout. And, you know, I think what would kind of, you know, ease the blow would be killing Skate. Please kill Skate. It's time.
For yourself and for us.
Right. Please spare us for her trying to continue to take Gisela's place. You're never gonna be Gisela, Skade. Never.
God, just quit. Like, right. You can't fill her shoes.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, there aren't a lot of options. Back in medieval days, if you're a Viking warrior looking to serve like a worthy lord.
Mm-hmm.
So as annoying as Alfred is, I think, you know, Uhtred's gonna miss that kind of that certainty and that stability that he had under,
sure,
Alfred. And honestly, I have no clue what I want to see next episode. Like, I feel, you know, it'd be nice to watch Uhtred kind of hand Alfred his ass some more because he deserves it. But
sure,
you get the feeling that that's, you know, that's something that Uhtred is very reluctant to do. Marching on Wessex, you know, is also a problem since they've got friends and family there. And yeah, I don't think Ragnar and Breeder are going to be soup's understanding of any of that.
Probably not. Probably not.
For the first time, it feels like, I feel like Uhtred's always had one foot in each camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like right now, that's the worst place to be. Because so now he's tried to like cross over to the fence and to Dane land and to be a Dane. And but his heart's not fully in it.
Sure.
So it's like, it just does not bode well for him, for the Cookham crew. I'm very worried. And yeah, I mean, I guess kill Skade. That's the only thing I can say for next episode. Give us something to root for, damn it.
Right. The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets their time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. Jessica, who is your arsling this week?
Okay, I think we've all known what a treasure Finnan is.
Yes.
But he showed up and showed out for Uhtred this episode in such a big way.
Yeah.
He, like, disturbed holy ground to help him dig up his wife's corpse. He helped him escape Wessex. He played concerned nursemaid when he got sick. He took him to Breda.
Like, he's a real one.
All the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the things. And, you know, there are friendship goals and then there are, you know, medieval friendship goals. And I think Finnan, definitely medieval friendship goals.
Yeah.
He's the Gale to Uhtred's Oprah. Mm. And I gotta respect that ride or die commitment.
Yeah.
The medieval Oprah Winfrey and Gale King.
You get a sword and you get a sword. Everybody gets a sword.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Please, someone like make that meme.
Right, please. Yeah, I mean, I totally get that choice. I'm going to go Breda because I have missed her. And she wasn't, you know, she didn't come around until later in the episode, but she made such a huge impact on the time that she was there. You know, she healed Uhtred. She brought the heat down on Skade. She blocked the curse. She kept her head high when her man was out doing whatever he was doing. Like, I miss having her as a regular player on the show, and seeing her, you know, working with Uhtred again just made that feeling all the more stark to me. You know, our Northern Queen deserves the world and more, and it was so good to see her again in this episode.
And also, Emily Cox is just such a brilliant actress.
She's so good. She does so much with just a look. You know what I mean? Like, she's so expressive, so talented. Emily Cox, we stan.
She's the best. And I think you can feel, like, when she's in a scene, it feels like everyone, like, steps up their game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's something about her presence, especially when she's, like, partnered with, like, Uhtred and Ragnarsson, and it's, or Ragnar and Uhtred and Breida, it's all three of them together. There's something about that group, and I feel like it's really Emily's, like, performance that is the glue. You know what I mean? There's just something there.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
We love you, Emily.
Right.
kisses, yeah. Okay. Get ready to shame Nun, the worst character of the episode, with us. It doesn't matter if you're Saxon or Dane, anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the episode. So, Alyssa, who, like, just really grinded your gears.
Grinded my gears. Okay, I'm going to go for a doubleheader of graspers in this episode. Like, you've got Athelwald, who's sort of seeing his opportunity to kind of snake the throne away from Edward after Alfred's eventual death. So he's, you know, doing what he does and stirring the shit and making moves to sort of destabilize the kingdom so that, you know, when Alfred does die, everything will be chaos, and people like Athelwald thrive on that kind of chaos, and so he's ensuring that it's going to happen. And additionally, he's giving Athelred the ammunition that he needs to take out Athelflaed, which is never cool in my book. And, you know, Athelred is the sort of second head of the snake that I hate in this episode. You know, he's super ready to kill the queen, kill her daughter, and he's ready to be on board with this new vision of England that is a lot less unified and has really just shitty leadership. So can we just obliterate both of these dickheads, please?
Yes. Like,
no more power for them. Just take them out.
Yeah, totally down with that.
Mm.
And I think, you know, we're starting to see that Athelwald is more than just, like, a drunk who's fun to laugh at sometimes. He's a real problem.
Yeah.
So as annoying as Athelwald's scheming is, as tiresome as Ethelred's, you know, murder plotting while stroking my pet hawk vibes are, and as much as I wish, like, Breida would have speared that ram's head, like, right through Skade's face tattoos,
right there with you,
my, you know, turd of this episode, it's got to be Alfred. I mean, he's just the ultimate shitbag this week, and
I kind of literally
it's yuck. Okay. Such good puns here on just a couple of our slings. Yeah, so punishing your best warrior because he bitch slapped your lecherous monk who kept calling his dead wife a whore is, like, such a choice.
And it's a bad look. A bad look.
Wrong one, dude. You, like, deserve to shit yourself with fear. And I hope that, you know, his beloved England won't exist much longer because he's exiled his, like, its best hope of survival. And I think he deserves to see it burn before he dies.
You know, and I think he knows that too. Like, there's that moment with him and Aelswyth when they're talking about, all right, this is bad. We need to sort of redirect from losing Uhtred and, you know, losing some power and all of that. Mm. So they're like, all right, we got to get Edward married and it's got to be a good one. And so he knows that he really fucked up with Uhtred, and he knows that that's a destabilization that the kingdom cannot handle right now. And so he's got his back against the wall. It is not good to be Alfred right now.
You done did it, bro. Sorry. It was all you.
Now, this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2019, the world is on fire, and honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this episode. Jessica, would you like to start us off on Horny Corner?
Horny Corner? Is that our, like, nickname for the segment now? I love it. yes, I would. So the hottest thing about this episode has got to be Finan.
Yep.
In all of his forms. Finan staring down Steoppa and singling out Ethelwald as the first Saxon he would kill. I mean, like, I know it's dark and it's weird.
Embrace it.
But you know what? Nothing gets those lady bits tinkling quite like an Irish hunk who knows how to wield his sword, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink. You can't see me, but wink, wink. And wield those witty insults.
That's a hard agree from me. You know, when he tells Uhtred that he's looking for a woman while they're amongst the Danes, I volunteer as tribute to be that woman.
Oh my God, yes. Put my name in that bowl right. 1,000 times.
Right. Effie Trinket, pull my name, please.
Yeah, Finnan was the saving grace because
heavy episode. So we need, you know, a little eye candy and a little, you know, witty repartee.
And who's better at that than this guy?
No one.
All right, guys, I think it's safe to say that we have never been accused of being unenthusiastic in our fandom. We annoy our friends, our family, and now you, our devoted listeners. Welcome to Geek Out, where we will offer up our humble suggestions about what we think you should be watching and reading. And Alyssa, I think...
We have the same one! Yes, I watched this last night, so I'm like ready to talk about it.
Whew, my God.
Okay, the new Netflix movie, The King... slaps. It's so good. I really enjoyed it. It's a banger. I really enjoyed it. And I could listen to Robert Pattinson's silly French accent every day until I died.
Okay, so I literally just wrote a piece about Robert Pattinson because we're having like a Pattinson renaissance.
Yes.
He's such a master of like reinvention, and mm-hmm. I feel like he gets a bad rap for the Twilight days.
Which isn't fair. You know what? I never would have guessed that in 2019 I would be, like, defending Twilight. But I will be one of those people that defends Twilight.
Oh, yeah. I'll go to the mat for Twilight. That, especially that first movie. That movie took risks.
Yes.
I mean, there was...
Catherine Hardwick did a good job.
Catherine Hardwick, she is so underrated. And that first movie especially is so underrated. But I think there are things about that series, not even just like the films themselves, but about the hysteria surrounding Twilight that kind of has stuck with some of them, worse than others.
Yeah.
I think he's been one.
Yeah.
And you've seen Kristen Stewart like do this like brilliantly.
They've both done it so well to sort of return to indie roots, show that they're actually great actors who did their best with bad material. And I think they're both, like, thriving now. But, yeah, Robert Pattinson, the Dauphin of France.
Having the time of his life, y'all. Like, I think he said in an interview, he said, so Lily Rose Depp plays the French princess who ends up kind of getting, you know, thrown to Timothy Chalamet's king at the end. If you know your history, shouldn't be a spoiler.
Right.
But
this happened 600 years ago. Read a book.
God. So Pattinson plays her brother, the Dauphin of France, and he's so good. I'm pretty sure that Pattinson has said in an interview that they were trying to come up with his look for the character, and he saw photos of Lily Rose Depp in costume, and he said, "I want to be a princess."
Oh too. My God!
And that's why he has the long hair.
It's perfect.
It's genius.
Yeah.
Just these little choices that he makes playing this dude.
I also heard that he sort of based the accent on the people who dressed him for Dior. So like, yes,
I heard that too.
Yeah, yeah. I saw somebody tweeting about that on Twitter, and
he's having a damn good time, you guys.
He really like he's only on screen for maybe like 10 minutes max, but he like makes the most of every single frame, and just like you said, he looks like he's having a great time.
He had a good time. He got to be a princess, and he cut that check and ran.
Right. Like,
get it.
He got that Netflix money. Good for you, R-Pad.
But there's more to this movie than just how
that accent
Robert Pattinson is.
Yes. That accent. Like, I thought the cinematography was really beautiful. It was such a well-made movie. I thought Timothée Chalamet was great. I always think Timothée Chalamet is great.
precious little cinnamon roll.
But he's so good. He was so good in this movie. I can't wait to see him in Little Women. He's gonna ruin my life. But yeah, I thought the movie was great. Like, you know, because it's kind of a mix of like actual history and the Shakespeare plays. So it's not 100% historically accurate, but I thought they did a really good job of, you know, using the history to tell a great story and to make a good movie, you know, because like there was that, there was the one last year, Outlaw King with Chris Pine and about Robert the Bruce. And it felt so dull and it never really got off the ground except for Florence Pugh, who's always amazing and will also destroy me in Little Women. But yeah, I thought I was kind of worried that this was would kind of fall in the same category as Outlaw King, but I thought it was a lot better.
Yeah, I feel like there's, I mean, you can only do so much with, like, what's from the history book. I feel like you have to add, I mean, if it's going to be in a movie, like a two-hour movie that we're sitting through, there has to be some drama, there has to be some entertainment. And yeah. I think it also, like, depends on the subject. I feel like, I mean, I love Chris Pine. He's a brilliant actor.
He cannot do a Scottish accent.
No. Yeah, I was not interested in hearing his Scottish accent. Mm-hmm. I'll have to say I was a little upset at how overblown his full frontal scene
was. It was nothing.
In the promos, and it was nothing.
Right.
and I think just, like, the whole, like, Robert the Bruce kind of storyline just wasn't fleshed out enough. There just wasn't enough in it to, like, grip me the way this one did.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that a lot of that is because Timothée Chalamet is just, ugh,
best actor of his generation.
The best actor of his generation, for sure.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job of, like, making the sort of macro struggles really interesting, like him becoming king and dealing with England, while also making the relationship level stuff really good. Like, I loved his stuff with Falstaff, and Joel Edgerton is so good. Like, they did a really good job of making the personal and the political interesting.
Yeah, agreed. So go see it. I mean, enjoy whatever the hell movie Robert Pattinson thought he was in.
Right. It may have been a different one than everyone else, but it's a one that I would watch. It's
excellent. Yeah. but yeah, it's really great. I love history. I love when we do, like, these big epics about, like, historical things.
Me too.
I would like to see more, done about women of history, so maybe we can do that.
Please,
next. I don't know.
Please, like, that's the one thing. Like, I know history, whatever, but, like, there were not a lot of women in this movie at all.
There was literally one.
Well, there's the sister too, who got one significant scene. But, like, yeah,
sister.
Right.
There's always a sister in these kinds of movies.
Right. So yeah, maybe we should tell some stories that include more women. Where is my Eleanor of Aquitaine biography film?
Ooh,
like, make it, please. Anyway,
yeah.
But yeah, watch The King on Netflix. It was really good.
All right, guys. I think, are we done?
Yeah, I think so. If you want to hear,
lead us out.
If you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls. We've got links to everything below this episode.
And until next time, Destiny is all, bitches.